What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today.
You are listening to
Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
Hey, what's up? It's Metal Shop. I'm on the phone right now with Vincent Bennett, vocalist for Acacia Strain. First off, I wanted to check, like, how are you doing, man? How are you staying sane in quarantine, staying home? Are you staying safe and sane?
I was built for this. Trust
nice.
Me. Like, if I ever had a dream, it would be doing this. Like, it sucks not being able to, like, go to the grocery store mm-hmm. without being afraid or go hiking or whatever, but I was built for staying home. I'm not loving it because of the situation, but I'm surviving and I'm staying as sane as I can because I am, this is what I usually do when I'm home from tour anyways. It's just, the only thing that's really, really, really frustrating is not knowing, if our tour plans for the future are going to be canceled
yeah.
or what is going on with actual live music. That's the only thing that's actually kind of scary, but everything else is just, I'm fine. I'm good.
So when you're at home, would you say, like, when you're not on the road, would you call yourself like a homebody kind of?
Absolutely. I'm gone from my home so often,
yeah.
like probably 6 months out of the year, I'm not home.
Mm-hmm.
So when I am home, I just love a good staycation. Like, I like just staying home
yeah.
And just, you know, enjoying my house
yeah.
while I can, because for half of the year I live in a van. So,
yeah. I mean, when you mentioned it's scary kind of going out to get groceries and stuff, but look at the positive part. Like, I made a bandana, a camo bandana, so I look like I'm about to mosh the throwdown in 2000, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's wild out there. Like, everybody, it's going to the grocery store and everybody's dressed like Sub-Zero. Like,
I know.
I started wearing a mask, like, long before it was, not before it was cool, obviously, but long
mask
before
hipster.
It was necessary. Before it was necessary, you know,
yeah.
like when I got home from tour, I was like, all right, this is fucking real.
Mm-hmm.
I have to go to the grocery store. I'm going to protect myself however I can. So I had, you know, hand sanitizer in my pockets. I had rubber surgical gloves, and I had a medical mask. And everyone at the grocery store was looking at me like I was crazy. And I'm like, are you guys serious? Like,
yeah.
why aren't you wearing this stuff? And now it's mandatory. So now you get looks if you're not wearing that
oh,
stuff,
yeah.
which I think good, because everyone should be doing their part, you know?
Yeah. When people are looking at you weird, like that first outing, you're just like, in your mind, you're like, give it a week, motherfuckers, give it a week.
Just wait. Yeah, exactly.
well, I mean, so let's talk a bit about that. You guys were out on tour when it started to get real. Things started to really shut
yeah.
down and escalate. Like, bring me back to that time. Like, where were you when you realized tour would have to end? And what was that like being out on the road in the beginning of a pandemic?
I mean, we started tour when it first really started to be talked about. We were
yeah.
in We were in New Haven, Connecticut at the end of February, right when the president was saying that it was no big deal. So we were all, you know, everybody was kind of just like, oh, this will pass. It's just like a cold or the flu. It's just whatever. It's no big deal. So nobody really had a grasp. I think we were all being misinformed and nobody really had a grasp of the seriousness of it.
Yeah.
So we were on tour and we weren't even thinking about it, you know, like we weren't seeing masks. Devin was extremely careful with hand sanitizers, but he gets sick very easily on tour and he gets sick always. So he was like, you know what? I'm not going to get sick on this tour. And we were all like, good job, man. Like, this is no big deal. It's isolated to California or whatever and it'll be over. And then week after week, we started like getting into the tour and like clubs started to shut down and restaurants started to shut down and states started to shut down. And we were like in Texas and we were like, oh, this is kind of crazy. So I wasn't giving the microphone to the crowd and I wasn't, you know, usually I spit giant plumes of water into the air and I wasn't doing that because I wanted to be socially conscious. And we were driving to California from Texas. And we stopped in Las Vegas at our friend Zach's house, who plays for the Ghost Inside, and we stayed at his house for a little while.
Awesome.
And that's when it started. That's when it really, really, like, when we drove there was when we first started getting the, oh, your Seattle show's canceled. And we were like, oh, that sucks.
Yep.
And then when we got to Vegas, it was, oh, your Portland show's canceled, and your Northern California show's canceled. And we were like, okay, well, we'll still go to California. Like, the Orange County show's still on. So the day off we had in Vegas is when I got a call from our manager, and this was like, okay, Seattle shut down. This is shut down. You know, you can't go here. And we were like, okay, whatever. Like, we'll just do the shows that we can. And our manager called me and he said, you know what? You have to go home. And I was like, what? And he's like, all the shows are getting shut. Like, there's 200 cap ban on everything, and you're not going to be able to, venues are just closing left and right. And we're like, all right, we'll play the California show because it's still on. So we did two shows in California at the Chain Reaction. We did 150 or 200 cap shows to adhere with the laws.
Yeah.
And we were like, all right, we'll book some shows on the way home. So last minute, we got a show in Las Vegas. So we drove back through Vegas and played a show. And when it was like, oh, all of the other shows are canceled on the way home. Like the shows that we got to help us get gas money to drive all the way across the country to Albany, New York, got canceled. So we had to do a dead drive from Las Vegas to Albany, and then Tom had to drive to North Carolina where he lives.
Jesus.
And it was just, it was crazy. Like I'm not here to like complain about, oh, we lost so much money and all this stuff, but it's like, we did.
Yeah.
And everybody did, and everybody is, and it's crazy, and everybody's in this. That's why I feel bad complaining, because we're all in the same boat. We're all losing money. We're all having a hard time. And it's just affecting different people in different ways. And it was crazy to see it unfold out there. You know, all I wanted to do was be home. All I wanted to do. As soon as it started to hit, I was just like, there's no way that we can safely say, yeah, shows can happen.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want to be responsible for that. So we just went home.
I saw that you guys kind of did, you at least were looking to book a couple like kind of VFW DIY shows. Did those end up getting canceled too? Or did those happen?
We did one VFW hall in Las Vegas, and that show got booked in 24 hours.
Damn.
24 hours. And there was like almost 200 people there in a VFW hall in Las Vegas. And after that, we were driving to Denver, Colorado, and the Denver show they just canceled it.
Yeah.
And then the show after that got canceled, and we were just like, you know what? Let's just go home.
Yeah.
And it going to happen. It would have been irresponsible of us to play them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just went home.
That's at that point, that's kind of all you can do.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit more positive side of things. You guys are doing a lot of stuff. You guys recently released the C 7-inch digital single.
Yes.
Before that, you released D and E. Both rad. Like the C one, I was listening to on my walk this morning, and like the second song on there, like it's, I was like, damn, dude, this is like groovy doom. Like,
yeah.
It's
Devin wrote that one. Devin is a big fan of the band Warning.
Ah, that's
comes off in the instrumentation of that one for sure.
So, as far as like the format behind releasing like 7-inch and digital singles, what was the idea behind doing these like drops of just a few songs at a time rather than a full length or EP? Like, where did this idea originate, man?
I've wanted to do this for a long time. Like, when I was a teenager and going to the record store every week, like, yeah, with my money that I would make working at Dairy Queen, I would go to the record store every mm-hmm. week and look at the 7-inches because they were $3 or yep. $4. And it seemed like every week I went to the record store, bands would have new music this format because it was cheap for them to press. And there was no Napster was the only way to get music, and you got it illegally. There was no Spotify. Mm-hmm. There was no way to release singles. So every week it seemed like it was like $4 to get two songs or three songs. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And it made me feel like, oh, yeah, I'm supporting the band. I have physical media. I'm ready to go. So that stopped after a little while. That just went away. You know, bands still release 7-inches, but not as frequently as they do, as yeah. they used to. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to kind of call back to that and just do a bunch of 7-inches. And that was the first thought in my mind, is like, hey, I just want to put out a bunch of 7-inches. Like, maybe there'll be splits with other bands or maybe this. And then I was like, that would be really fucking hard to
coordinate all that.
You know? Just go in the studio every month and record two songs. So then I was like, well, what if we did them all at once and released them, you know, a little bit, and it'll be like kind of like a full length, but a different way to release it. And that's kind of, you know, just where the initial thought came from, just being reminded of being a kid and going to the record store and just being like, wow, they're still coming out with music. Like, yep. it feels like they just came out with a record a month ago. Like, so that's kind of what we're trying to do. That's too many bands release, you know, take too long to release records, so mm-hmm. now we're just releasing in rapid fire.
I remember distinctly, so this kind of brings a couple things in mind to me. We talked with Phil and someone when he was doing the Down EPs, and he said, I'm never going to do another full length again. Like, there's no point. He said, and I'm not, you know, saying that that's what your idea is, but he was speaking to the point that he's like, it just gets lost. Like, you put an amazing song in, 10 tracks in, nobody's going to listen to that.
Exactly.
He's like,
that was my other, after thinking about this, I was like, you know what? Like, exactly what you just said, what Phil said, is that you put a CD on and you put it in your car and you put it on when you're going for a run, you never hit the 10th song.
Yeah.
You never hit the 11th song or 12th song. Those songs just get lost. It's like playing a video game, you know, like where you play the first level so many times, you know it like the back of your hand.
Yep.
But once you get to those later levels, you're like, what the hell is this? I can't even beat this. So it's kind of like, you never hear that. So when you release it, like, here's two songs, listen to them, and yep. people listen to the full song. You yep. know, they don't skip the track, or they know. So if a full length comes out with all of these songs on them, people will already know, okay, so now I have one place to go with all of these songs, and I know every single one. This is how they were released.
Back in the early 90s, Sub Pop Records did this thing. It was like the singles subscription, where you would pay like a yearly thing, and they would send you the monthly single.
And yeah, Doghouse did that too, I think.
Oh, that's, I mean, it's kind of like, not, obviously it's not the same thing, but it's almost like you guys, the Acacia Strain, you know, periodically you release a single and check it out. Here's the Acacia Strain singles collection or subscription.
And we wanted to have it so people wanted to get every single one, you know, so that's, we put the letters with the letters on it. And it's obviously going to spell something, and people are going to want to have every single one. If they have D E no C, then what the hell? You know,
even if
they don't like the songs, they want to have that. They want to have that letter.
I think that maybe once the word is created, once they find out, maybe then they could go back and they could rearrange it to create some like naughty words or something, you know, they could rearrange the
I'm really thinking about what words they would spell, and they'd probably just be in a foreign language.
So you guys did
naughty foreign words,
naughty foreign word. That's the best kind. I love the label Closed Casket Activities. They put out some of my favorite records over the last couple of years, like Vane and The Harm's Way. Actually, no, they did Eyes of the Lord. Yeah, anyways. So Closed Casket's badass. You guys did a surprise drop of their album, of your album It Comes in Waves last year on their label. Yeah. How did you guys get to working with Closed Casket Activities? Because like they're big within like the underground hardcore, but I would definitely say you guys are like the biggest band that's been released on Closed Casket. How did that come about?
Justin and I have been friends for a very long time. Like I live in upstate New York, and that's where Closed Casket is based out of. And I've known Justin just from going to shows, and he used to put on shows at this place called the Drop Zone. And so I met him kind of through that. And we've known each other for a very long time. I've known Justin for almost like 12 years now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And we've been friends, and for a while we worked together. We were co-workers for All In Merch.
Oh, cool.
We shared an office, and we got to talking, and I was like, you know, what do I have to do to like put out a record on your label? And he's like, all you have to do is write a record and I'll put it out. So I wanted to go kind of weird with it, you know,
yeah.
Because like you said, Closed Casket is a very, they're an underground label, but they have a certain format that, mm-hmm. and I respect Justin. I respect Justin for that for many reasons, but he doesn't really stray from his format of the bands that he likes to put out. So,
yeah.
We decided we'll make it kind of an experimental thing, as far as the Case Train is concerned.
Yeah.
And it kind of came together over a couple of years, and, I just wanted to do something cool with Justin. We've wanted to work together. I used to be in a band called Cock Punch, and Justin actually put out our first record on Closed Casket a very, very long time ago.
That's cool.
So, I've been listening for a while. So to do something that wasn't, and I think, in my opinion, like it's my favorite thing that we've ever done. And I think it's the most forward thinking record Case Strains ever put out. And because of that record, all of our music is going to kind of be a little bit more experimental here and there, you know?
Yeah, man.
So the Closed Casket record is it's probably one of my favorite things, just because of the way we did it and the history behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know. It's just fun to me.
The experimental direction that you guys went in, I mean, there's like some post-rock influence in there. There's like, a little bit of mellow death a little bit as far as the instrumentation, and just, it's some doom. I mean, I'm not trying to like classify you guys, but it is definitely experimental in that as far as Acacia Strain goes. Is that something that happened organically, or like who was just, was there a person in the band that was like, dude, let's try something new?
So this was Tom. It was Tom's first time writing for Acacia Strain.
Cool.
So he was super nervous, and he was like, you know, I don't know what to do. What do I do? I don't want to not write an Acacia Strain record. And I was like, hey, guess what? This isn't a typical Acacia Strain record. Write whatever you want.
That's cool.
Write whatever you want. And that was the thing that kind of pushed Tom, was to do whatever was influencing him at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Griffin was the same way. Griffin helped write most of Grave Bloom. And Griffin was just like, I can do whatever I want. Like, one of Griffin's favorite bands is the Foo Fighters.
Cool.
So like, he's like, yeah, I can do whatever I want. So that happened. And then Devin is a huge Doom fan.
Yep.
So he was like, oh, I can finally do some Doom stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where it all landed. It was basically a do whatever the hell you want record. And everybody had free form to literally write whatever they wanted with no judgment whatsoever. And without having to adhere to whatever format that they thought Acacia Strain had to stick to.
And it was probably pretty freeing as far as just those, you know, any break all barriers and say, screw it.
Absolutely. And we did it on tour. Like, we recorded it.
Oh, that's
cool.
Wrote
it and recorded on tour. So it was like, wherever we could get a free minute, we would just put down a riff, and then, you know, later on just perfect it a little bit, and it all came together just like that, just piecemeal. And it ended up just flowing so well that we made it one song.
That's awesome. So I wanted to pivot over to this because it's something that so I've listened to you on a couple interviews, and I don't want to speak for you or put words into your mouth, but it seems to me, just from seeing you over the years, as far as your band goes, like seeing you live, it's pretty apparent that you seem to be a bit more positive about things these days. Is that true? And where did this change in your outlook stem from?
It's absolutely true. I just woke up one day and was like, why am I like this? You know, why, what's my problem? Like, my, I don't have it that bad, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was trying to figure out, like, why I had the outlook that I did. And it took me a while to figure it out. Like, and I wrote in a notebook every day about, like, oh, what made you angry today? What do you think put you in a bad mood today? And it turned out a lot of it was, it wasn't self-inflicted, but it was things in my life that I didn't need that were making me this way. It was people, uh-huh. and it was situations, and it was feelings, and it was things that I did that just didn't make me happy. And I realized that this isn't the way a person should live. There's no reason that you should just be angry and be sad and be negative for the sake of it. There's reasons to be mad and there's reasons to be sad. And I wasn't clinging to any of them. I just was doing it just to do it. And I realized that it was pointless. I couldn't continue living my life like that because it was bringing me down.
Yeah.
It was making me miserable. I was hard to be around. I was hard to talk to. And I was just a bad person. And I didn't want to be like that anymore. So I took that notebook and I started, you know, cross the list, like crossing things off the list.
Yes.
Yeah. Physically kind of expunge them from my life. People that were making me feel bad, I just stopped talking to them. It was pointless. You know, these things that I did that didn't make me happy, I stopped doing them and I started doing things that made me happy.
Nice.
And I started eating better and I started exercising. Yeah. And I started making myself feel like a better person. And it worked, you know. Operation Ivy, sick body, sick mind. Well, guess what? Healthy body, healthy mind too.
Yeah.
You know, so I was eating better and I was exercising and it made my brain different. So I was just taking all of the steps that I could to make myself a better person. And in turn, it made me think better and it made me happier. And it made me want to tell my story to people.
Yeah.
Because I know Case of Strain fans and heavy metal fans in general are a different breed of people. You know, we are all, I don't want to say the same, but we all have similar qualities that make us want to listen to such angry and loud music.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, you know, we're lonely, we're sad, we're depressed, we're upset. We have things in our lives that happened that f***ed us up. And I want people to know that, like, you can listen to heavy metal and be angry. And it's not a bad thing to be angry, but don't be angry just to be angry. You have to change and be better. And you can't just be an ass to be one. The earth, the world, and this country especially has enough ass in it. We don't need more. So what you should do in turn is be the anti-ass and hold doors for people and smile and wave to your neighbors and just be the person that those people don't think you're going to be because you listen to heavy metal music and because, you know, you wear black, you mm-hmm. know, they don't expect that from you. And I think, it takes a long time. It took me years to get to where I am right now, to expunge all of that nonsense. And I had to open up to people and I had to talk to people and I had to understand that talking helps. And if you're having a problem, don't be afraid to call someone on the phone or text them like, hey, can we talk for a second? I really need to get something off my chest. Like, it's important to do everything that you can to be happy and to be a positive person, and to, even though it might be, you know, PMA might not be your thing exactly, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but you can't just walk around being miserable all the time for no reason. Like, you gotta do what you can just to be kind of be happy. And I want people to realize that if I can do it,
yeah.
I was terrible. If I can do it, anybody can.
It'll eat you up inside if you don't. So that's
absolutely.
I mean, So with all of that self-reflection, I mean, you're also, I know from listening to interviews that you're also still actively always seeking out new music, and you're all, like, music is, it seems to be a bit of a therapy, at least for you, as it is to a lot of us. Are there any albums specifically that, like, if you're having a day, or if you're just like, you're in your mind, or you're in a negative feedback loop, are there any albums specifically that you can go to that can, like, lift your spirits and are therapeutic to you?
I usually I listen to Earth.
Yeah.
Earth is my favorite band, and if I had a bad day,
wow,
I usually just turn all the lights off and just put on an Earth record as loud as I can. Even though it's quiet music, I love Earth.
Yeah.
And I'll light a candle and I'll drink a cup of coffee. But I love it. That's the thing that helps me just unwind at the end of everything.
I got to see Earth. Was it on Halloween? Yeah, I think it was on Halloween this past year. I saw Earth, and Dylan was wearing, Dylan from Earth was wearing bunny ears. It was awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah. They're literally my favorite. And anything after Hex on is just a masterpiece. Hibernaculum is one of my favorites. Angels of Darkness, Demons of Light 1 is, I think, one of the best records ever written. So
yeah,
anything Earth has done is just, it's a really good de-stressor at the end of the day.
Absolutely, man. Damn. I didn't expect that from, that's really cool. Earth, you know, that band's so good.
I listen to a lot of Miles Davis. Miles Davis is my favorite instrumentalist of all time. So
okay.
A lot of Miles Davis too. Yeah.
So you mentioned that part of changing your outlook on things and changing your head, changing your mind was your body. So healthy body, healthy mind, and you've gotten pretty damn fit over the last few years. So first off, congratulations on that. And
thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Trying.
How are you staying active while also staying safe now? Are you doing home workouts? Are you going on like little personalized like isolated walks, or how's that going for you?
It's always been home workouts since the beginning. I don't like going to the gym because I don't like gym culture. Even if it's like a Planet Fitness, like I just don't like being a place because you feel like you're obligated to work out because you have this. You should want to work out because you want to, not because you feel like you have to. So I've always been really into cardio, and I know like a lot of like meatheads out there or lifters are very anti-cardio because it doesn't help them bulk up, but I'm not trying to be like a big strong guy. I'm just trying to stay in shape.
Mm-hmm.
So cardio is good. I recently got into, well, in the past couple of years, I've gotten into kettlebells.
Yeah.
Kettlebells are amazing, and they're almost impossible to find right now because everybody that doesn't have a gym membership, that can't go to the gym, they like soaked the internet of all kettlebells. You can't buy them anywhere. So luckily I've had them for a while. So I do kettlebells 3 times a week. I do cardio, and I do resistance bands also.
Oh, cool.
Are a great way to stay toned. I do a lot of, I do kettlebells, then cardio. I do like every 3 days or whatever. And it's really cool. Like, it's just nice to be like, all right, it's 9, just ate my breakfast. Now I got to work out. Don't take a shower and start my day. Like, it's a good feeling. You feel like you accomplished something that early in the morning. It's
mm-hmm.
cool. I just bought something called this is something that Justin from Closed Casket actually introduced me to. I just bought one. It's called a workout mace. And it's like this long stick with a huge metal ball on the end. It's a literal fucking mace without the spikes.
Sounds like black metal.
You just swing it around and like you hit the ground with it and stuff. And it's like supposed to like tone every, it's supposed to work every muscle in your body. So I'm supposed to get mine into mail tomorrow. So I'm really excited to get this like thing. That's just, it's literally a mace. And Justin sent me this video and he's like, yeah, I know. It's like a lot of Viking workouts, but they work. And I'm like, all right, man, whatever works. So yeah, I'm really excited to get that.
You know, you got to listen to like Immortal and Dark Throne while you do that.
Absolutely.
Though,
right? Yeah. Anything from Norway or Sweden, I'm just going to be just ripping it as loud as I can.
That's amazing.
Emperor is my favorite black metal band. I love them.
Oh, that's awesome. So let's go back to a little bit to your formative days, if you don't mind. Like you were talking about like, going home from Dairy Queen and picking up CDs or picking up records. What was the first album? And even if it's embarrassing, first one that you ever purchased on your own, with your own money?
The first one was a cassette tape. I bought a cassette tape by a band called The Breeders.
Oh, yeah. I know the
record.
Breeders.
The record was called Last Splash. It's Kim Deal from Pixies.
Yeah.
Other band. And The Breeders, that was the first cassette tape I ever bought with my own money. And it was from a record store called The Wall.
Okay.
And I still have it. It's not worn out because I didn't want to break it. But, yeah, I still have that tape.
Did you get them from, like, 120 minutes on MTV or something? You saw, like, a random video or the radio?
I remember Cannonball was on MTV a lot when I was, like, 13 or 12. Probably 12 years old. And my friend Justin had an older brother who mm-hmm. was more into music, and I learned a lot from him. And he videotaped, like, one of their performances from Lollapalooza or something like that. And I was like, holy, this is crazy. The whole crowd's going nuts. And I was like, I love the Breeders. So I had a crush on Kim Deal when I was a kid too. The Pixies are like up from around where I grew up.
Oh, cool.
So I knew about the Pixies and I found out about the Breeders through MTV. So I was like, oh, Kim Deal from the Pixies has a band where she sings. Awesome. So yeah. Nice. The first CD I ever got where I didn't buy it myself was Crisscross, Totally Crossed Out.
Oh yeah,
9 years old. Yeah,
I wore my clothes backwards and didn't look that cool. But picture like a 7 year old white kid in the suburbs with his clothes backwards.
Yeah, trying to be like Crisscross in a roller skating party.
So what was your formative time in like hardcore and punk? What got you exposed to, you know, underground hardcore metal music, the aggressive stuff?
I was super into ska when I was a freshman in high school.
Pick it up, pick it up, pick it up.
I loved ska music. Yeah, I was from Massachusetts, so like the ska scene was huge. Like
Boston's
from there, and Spring Heel Jack.
I remember them.
I think Rhode Island or Long Island. I don't know. I was from the Northeast. So ska was huge. Moon ska from New York and all that other stuff. So I started going to ska shows because one of my older siblings liked ska, and she like was like, oh, check this out. It's like this local band. I was like, local band? Like there's bands that play concerts that aren't, you know, huge.
Yeah.
And I found like the underground ska scene when I was like 14. And I was wearing those like JNCO jeans with like the checkerboards on the side.
Root
boy. I was so cool wearing giant extra large t-shirts. And I was like, the local promoter for all the ska shows was also the local promoter for all the hardcore shows and all the metal shows.
Okay.
So when you would go to a ska show, this young 15 year old me with spiky hair, I would get flyers for other shows, and I was like, well, I have nothing else to do. What is Earth Crisis?
Uh-oh.
So I would wear my ska get up, and I'd go to this f-ing show where Earth Crisis and Aftershock were playing, and I was like,
amazing.
What is this? So I started listening to hardcore, and I started listening to punk rock. Like, I listened to NoFX and stuff. And
yeah.
Before ska, it was NoFX and the Punk-O-Rama mm-hmm. compilation and stuff like that. But then I got into hardcore because I like got a Victory Records comp or whatever, and I started going to Earth Crisis shows or whatever local hardcore band that was playing. Any show, like that's how it was. Like you didn't care what music was playing.
Yeah.
Any show you could go to, you would go to as long as your parents would drop you off. Like, so I had a wide array of shows, and I want to thank the promoter's name was Scott Lee, and he later on became one of my best friends in the entire world. So
cool.
I want to thank Scott Lee for introducing me to a wide array of music just by booking touring bands. Like it was so cool.
So coming from, you know, this ska kid who goes to these hardcore shows, like what gave you the confidence to get on a microphone and try that out?
I really have no idea. Basically what happened was like, I was going to these shows and people from my high school were like in bands. And I was like, what the hell? Like you can do that. You can be a teenager and be in a band and play actual shows.
Yeah.
Like, you can be on stage. I was blown away. Cause like, you know, I was like freshman and sophomore and these seniors were in bands and playing, you know, it's really terrible shows, like mm-hmm. 15 people at them, but they were still playing music. And I was like, this is so cool. Like, I want to do that. I want to do it. And it was really hard because when you're 15 years old without a car, without any talent whatsoever, finding other people to play music with was nearly impossible.
Yeah.
So like, you know, you'd have to like scour your high school for anyone. You play guitar? You play drums? Like, I'll learn how to play drums.
Yep.
I played the timpani snare in my junior high's marching band. I'll play drums for you. I've never touched a drum kit in my life. Like, you just find anybody who did anything. So I was just like looking for this kid I knew, Nelson, played jazz guitar. He plays guitar. He owns a guitar. Okay, let's start a band. Oh, this kid Ben, who was younger than me, was in his marching band when he was a kid. So okay, he'll learn how to play the drums.
Yep.
And we were just throwing together left and right. Anything that we could do to go into my mom's basement and make noise, covering Rage Against the Machine or whatever the hell we could do, we would just do it. And that's kind of how it started. I wanted to be a vocalist because I would be in my friend's car and we'd just be laughing and I just started screaming and he was like, you should get a microphone. And I'm just like, all right, cool. Like,
let's do it.
So I've always wanted to be in a band since I was a young teen.
That's cool, man.
And I don't know how it got started, but here I am yelling into microphones still at 38.
Dude, that's awesome, man. It's cool that to hear like the origin stories of this, because you know when diehard Acacia Strain fans will they'll come to your shows and see you up there and it's just like such a given that you're just like killing it. But like, let's think back, like, you know, you were just like us, probably that awkward kid that was like, didn't know what they were doing, but you just gave it a shot. And
now I'm just an awkward adult who still has no idea what he's doing.
I love it. So Vincent from the Acacia Strain is who I'm talking to. I just have a couple more questions. First off, this is a question that might take a bit of time for you, but if you could, I want you to pick four albums that have made a positive impact on your life.
Okay. My aunt bought me Led Zeppelin 4 when I was 13 for my 13th birthday.
Nice.
And Led Zeppelin 4 really just kind of changed my brain as far as music was concerned. I listened to a lot of alternative rock. Like, I listened to a lot of Nirvana and Pearl Jam and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, louder the better. So my aunt bought me this Led Zeppelin record. I was like, Led Zeppelin, this is fucking old people music. I don't want to listen to this.
Yeah.
So when I finally got around to putting it in my CD player, I was like, whoa, this is what music could be like. It's not just yelling and loud guitar. Like, it can be epic. And so, yeah, Led Zeppelin 4 definitely changed my life for the better because it let me expand my brain when it came to music. This is hard. Okay, so Overcast, Fight Ambition to Kill.
Yeah.
It was definitely a record that changed me. It introduced me to a different kind of metalcore. Or I already knew about Earth Crisis, and I already knew about, you know, other bands like that. But Overcast, Fight Ambition to Kill, kind of just blew my mind.
That was Brian from Shadows Falls band, right?
Yeah, Brian from Shadows Falls, old band from like the Boston area. And I was like, what is this noise? This is crazy. They have samples, and they have his voice. He sounded like a demon, and they called themselves Devilcore, and I was like, yo, what the hell? Like, I was like 16 years old. I was like, what is this? This is crazy. So, that's one. Let's see, two more that changed my life positively.
Yeah.
I'd want to say Miles Davis, Kind of Blue, was my introduction to jazz music.
Yeah.
Again, I was one of those kids who was like, music has to be loud, and music has to be angry, and music has to be this. And I was really into, like, you know, I was into Overcast, and I was into Converge, and I was into all the, you know, the Massachusetts metal bands like Shadows Fall and stuff. So I was like, all right, yeah, music has to be loud. And then my mom, or I don't remember where I heard this record for the first time, but it was just like, what is this? This is like, music doesn't have to be loud. This record came out in the 60s, and it just exploded my brain. Mm-hmm. I was like, music can be quiet and still be impactful. Like, that record introduced me to a different type of music that I did not know I would enjoy. And ever since then, I've been huge jazz fan. And jazz, I'd say right now, for the past 10 years, has been my genre of choice.
Oh, wow.
When it comes to music. I don't, you know, I play loud, heavy, angry music, but I don't always want to listen to that, and I need something else. And mm-hmm. jazz is the thing. So Miles Davis Kind of Blue was my doorway to a different type of music.
Cool.
And let's see, fourth one. I want to give you a hardcore record that really made me better. Man, this is hard. This is hard because I don't have a list in front of me. Of
for
like,
sure,
oh,
yeah.
I'm going to scroll through this and look. Like, what's a hardcore record that maybe I don't listen to this one at all anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the first, like, I guess, hardcore records I ever heard was, oh yeah, this one. So a band called Strife from California.
Oh yeah, great band.
Put out a record called In This Defiance.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at a show, and some vendor, Strife wasn't even playing the show, but I liked Strife. I liked them, heard them on a Victory Records comp or whatever, mm-hmm. and I liked them, and I bought the CD In This Defiance, and I was like, yes, I love this. It's perfectly polished. Chino from the Deftones is on a song. Like, I was like, wow, guest vocals, they know him. That's so cool that he would be on the record. So I listened to that record. I wore that record out, I swear to God. And then I was at a show, and some vendor was there, and he was selling merch from other bands, and I saw a Strife shirt, and I was like, Strife, cool, I love them. They're not even playing the show. I can own this shirt and not be a poser from buying it from Hot Topic.
Right.
And I bought the shirt, and on the back it said, you know, Straight Edge. And I was like, what the f*** is Straight Edge? So,
oh, wow.
So I like asked around. I was like, oh, Straight Edge, like, that means you don't drink or do drugs. And I was like, wow, I don't do that anyways. Like, there's a name for it. I can feel like I'm part of something. And so I was introduced to Straight Edge through the band Strife and through the record In This Defiance. And I guess that probably is one of the most positive records that's changed my life for the better, because of Straight Edge, because that's how I found out about Straight Edge and how I felt like I belonged to something that was bigger than myself. And Strife, In This Defiance.
Awesome, man. So if you put what were those picks again? It was Strife, Miles Davis.
Yep, Strife, Miles Davis, Overcast, and Led Zeppelin.
Put all those together and you get the new Acacia Strain record, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, the next one will be influenced by those four artists and those four artists alone.
Okay, Vincent, who would play you in a movie if there was an Acacia Strain movie?
Idris Elba.
Idris Elba. I like it. All right. Yeah.
I want Idris Elba to play me.
Stringer Bell.
Or who's the guy from 300? Who's that guy? What is his name?
Oh, my God. The guy with the huge abs, with the crazy abs. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
Gerard.
Butler. Yeah.
Is that his name? Gerard Butler?
Yeah.
That guy.
Okay, right on. So final questions I have for you, and if you can, pick a scar on your body and tell us the story of how you got that scar, Vincent.
Let's see. Scar. Okay, I have a scar on my middle finger mm-hmm. of my left hand. This is a good one. This is the stupidest thing I've ever done in my entire life. So,
good story.
I have a scar on my middle finger. It's on the left and the right side of my middle finger. And I was at my house. So this is recent. This is within the past 5 years.
Okay.
I was in my house and I was burning a Yankee candle, and I noticed that the candle was burning poorly. It was burning down the center without melting any of the wax on the side. So I took the candle and I took a steak knife and I was going, you can see where this is going. I was going to clean all of the wax from that was tunneling. I was going to clean it from the edge of the candle.
Yeah.
So I took the candle and I took a steak knife and I was using a great amount of pressure to get the wax off of the sides of the candle. And I pushed the knife through the wax, through the glass, and through my finger.
Oh.
and this is making me kind of sick talking about it, but so it looked like special effects from a Saw movie.
Aww.
I had this knife that I was holding with my right hand, threw a candle and my finger, and the candle was hanging off of the knife. So what I had to do was I had to think fast and pulled the steak knife, that's a serrated knife. I pulled it out of my finger and immediately started bleeding all over my kitchen. So I know first aid. I'm an Eagle Scout, so I know first aid. I'm trained in first aid. So I immediately put my arm over my head, wrapped it in a towel, and called a friend on the phone because I had to keep my mind busy. I had to keep myself from going into shock.
Yeah.
So I called my friend and I said, hey, I just did the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life. I really need to talk to you. I don't want to talk about it, but please just keep my mind busy. So I had this gaping wound in my finger and I was talking to my friend. So when I finally thought the bleeding had stopped, I sat on my couch and I took the wrapping off and I just immediately started bleeding again.
Ah.
So I wrapped it back up. I went to CVS, which is right by my house. I went to CVS, put my hand in my pocket, wrapped it in a towel, and I bought needle and thread and some bandages, and some Bactine, and some all these things to clean a wound, butterfly stuff. And I went back home. So I paid for it. I used my right hand to pay for it. Not thinking, oh, my hand is literally covered in blood.
Yeah.
So I paid for this with bloody money. I went home and I literally stitched my finger up myself.
Oh my God. Damn.
I had to do. I don't have insurance, so I couldn't go to the hospital.
Yeah.
I don't like going to the emergency room. I would have been in the emergency room for four hours at least. So I just stitched it up myself. So now I can't straighten out my finger all the way, and I have a scar on either side. But that's my story.
I appreciate you making yourself woozy just for the good story, dude. I appreciate that.
Yeah, literally the dumbest thing I've ever done in my entire life.
Damn.
Aside from getting married.
Well, all right, man. So you're staying busy at home, and I'm sure you're playing lots of video games, and you know, if you're listening,
I have a Twitch channel. If anybody wants to,
shout that out.
Twitch.tv/VinnyBenny.
What kind of games are you playing on there?
This week I've played Final Fantasy VII all week. I do themed weeks. So like this week has been Final Fantasy VII. Next week is Mega Man. Last week was Castlevania. But every Saturday I do 2 hours of Dead by Daylight for a lot of people love that game and I like playing it. So every Saturday is Dead by Daylight and I take recommendations. It's more for me to like interact with fans. It's not as much me playing video games. It's me like hanging out and talking to people because that's what I feel like what everybody needs right now is somebody to talk to.
That's cool, man. So Vinny Benny?
Yeah, VinnyBenny.
Right on. You'll check him out on Twitch and definitely check out the new Acacia Strain stuff. Order a 7-inch. You know, they can use your help and all independent and awesome underground bands can use your help. So support artists in need and check out the new Acacia Strain. Is there any final words you want to say to a Seattle audience while I got you?
Just stay home. Please, just stay home. As long as you can.
This has been Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
No matter why you give, your donations can do so much more with a donor-advised fund from DAFGiving 360. You can get a tax deduction upon funding an account, and your assets can potentially grow tax-free as you recommend when and where to give. It's a tax-smart way to maximize your charitable giving from a fund with over 25 years of expertise bringing donors, financial advisors, and charities together. Make a greater impact with DAFGiving 360. Learn more at DAFGiving360.org.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.